The Public Affairs Department of KXO Radio keeps you informed with recorded podcast coverage of the 2020 Candidates Forum for the IID Division II race. The forum was recorded Thursday evening, January 30th. It is now available as a podcast by logging on to kxoradio.com, or you can go to the KXO YouTube channel. Coverage is underwritten by CoLab of Imperial County and the IV Veg Growers. We take you now to our moderator, David Cunyas.
Good evening, and thank you for attending tonight's Imperial Irrigation District Division 1 for Board of Directors Candidate Forum, sponsored by the Coalition of Labor, Agriculture, and Business. As we know at CoLab, in the Imperial Valley Vegetable Growers Association, the primary election for this seat is March 3rd, 2020. We encourage you to vote. My name is David Cañas, and I will be the moderator for this evening. My timekeeper is Mr. Ramiro Urias, sitting over across from me. As trade associations, we decided to make a concerted effort to educate our members and the public of the candidates for office in order to provide them with the best possible information with which to make a personal decision for this election process. I would like to recognize the candidates for office in attendance this evening, and in the order that their names will appear in the ballot: Ryan Childers, John Brooks Hamby, Bruce Kuhn, and Dilda McFadden. The format for this evening's forum is as follows. Each candidate will have 3 minutes for an opening statement to review their qualifications, thoughts, and major platform items. There will be 3 questions asked by a moderator pertaining to the issues for the contest at election office. Each candidate will have 2 minutes to respond. Each candidate will have 2 minutes for a closing statement. My moderator and timekeeper will hold the candidates to the allotted time. You will see the lights standing across from me, and the green you'll see at 30 seconds before the end. 10 seconds before, you'll see the yellow. The red light will come on, and I will stop the candidate at 5 seconds after when it's red. Questions from the audience will be asked as time permits at the end of the forum and prior to closing statements. The forms for the questions are in the back room. Once you complete your written questions, please provide it to Ms. Kay Pricola. The question must be directly related to the responsibilities of the IID Board of Directors or the experience of the candidate. No personal attacks will be allowed. A random drawing was determined by a sequence of opening remarks, and a random sequence will be followed for questions. Introductions are limited to 3 minutes allotted for each candidate. They will be as follows. First will be Mr. Hamby. Second will be Mr. McFadden. Third will be Mr. Kuhn. Fourth will be Mr. Childers. Thank you, and we now ask questions prepared for CoLab. So, gentlemen, you have 3 minutes, and Mr. Hamby, you're first.
Thank you for being here. My name is J.B. Hamby, and I'm a candidate for IID Division II. You might ask yourself, what is a young man like me doing running for IID with people double and triple his age? And while age has nothing to do with maturity or certainly capability, I do want to address those few folks who are concerned primarily by my youthful appearance, despite my preparation and qualification. For those of you concerned with my youth, listen to my voice as I'm speaking, but think of this aged photo of what I might look like at Director Kuhn's age. Hopefully this matured appearance will allow you to better hear what I have to say this evening. Now, there are candidates in this race saying they will keep power rates low or that there won't be a rate increase this year. But they're not telling you they won't raise them. Ours is the only campaign to pledge to voters to oppose all efforts to raise power rates over the next 4 years. I think it's also important to set the record straight on water transfers. The greatest value is created with our water when our water is put to use in Imperial Valley, not when it is sold elsewhere. So who benefits when our water is sold outside our valley? IID and a select few big landowners who split $125 million a year. Jobs are lost, our economy shrinks, the Salton Sea gets smaller, and toxic dust blows. That means our kids in the next decades will probably need one of these. And if the wheezing doesn't stop, they'll need one of these too. And if their nebulizer is out of medication, expired, or just isn't working, they will hope dearly, like I have many times, that you can get another breath as you rush to the hospital. A few people get big bucks, the coast gets our water, and we will have emergency rooms filled with sick kids on windy days. This election will be about whether we want economic benefit for the chosen few or a better environment for the rest of us. In this Division II seat, we don't need limited knowledge on the real issues selected by a certain group of individuals to forward their interests, not the people's. And we cannot afford another four years that look just the same as the last 16. This place is where we live. It's the air we breathe, where our kids go to school, where we build families and homes. On March 3rd, vote J.B. Hamby for IID Division II. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hamby. Mr. McFadden, 3 minutes, sir.
My name is Gilda McFadden. My name is Gilda McFadden, a lifelong resident here in Imperial County. The reason that I'm running is that there seems to be a voice missing at the table. I'm for all the people. I recognize agriculture is the number one industry here in Imperial Valley. It's over a $3 billion industry between three and four. It creates a lot of jobs. And the way to do the way they do that is that we must protect our water. We must protect our power rates. When I say protect our water, I think we need to be very aggressive about it. You know, we're not communicating with each other. Some of these lawsuits, I think, could be prevented if the parties would just sit down, communicate, and express each other's idea, respect each other, because right now it's a very challenging climate. And I think the citizens have a lot of interest. The citizens' voice need to be heard, and I would like to represent all the people, senior citizens. I would also like to help county IID employees. Sometimes their rights are not protected. But the number one thing is I'd like to represent all the people of Imperial County, be a voice for them, the voice that is not being heard on the board right now. We must be more aggressive in our protection of our number one resource. I'm for economic development, growth in Imperial County. I think we need to create jobs. IID has always been at the forefront of some of the economic infusion into our county. As I've heard before, $125 million comes in here from the water transfer each year. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of jobs. I just want to be a voice for the people, all the people. And that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Mr. McFadden. Mr. Kuhn, 3 minutes for your opening statement.
And I thank you. And thank you all for attending. And I thank CoLab for putting this forum on. And we'll get with it here. First things first, there was, my name is Bruce Kuhn. I am the sitting director in Division II. I was on for 8 years, then I was gone for 8 years. I started in 96 to 2004, then I was gone. I came back on in 2012. I ran for re-election 2016, and now I'm in my fourth year of my fourth term. So there was an 8-year gap. Many things happened in that 8 years. I'd just like to touch bases on some of the things that were said here this evening. First, the breathing machine, the asthma medicine, that sounds good, looks good. Certainly if you are medically inclined or you need it, then, well, you should have it. But it's been alluded to that you're going to need that because we're drying up because of water's leaving the valley. It's not so. With the transfer, we are able and are farming all the ground that was already farmed. We're doing it with less money because the water that is now left here is through conservation. And that $125 million a year payment that we get for that water is paying for that conservation. And that was the idea of the transfer all along. Farm the same amount of ground with less water. And we're doing it. So it's not drying up. You won't be seeing that with your kids here anytime soon. Won't be necessary. And this year we had a 34,000 acre feet. I would let one of my opponents take that into gallons, like billions of gallons. I mean, here we deal in acre feet. We always have. We don't deal in gallons. We don't sell it in jugs. We don't give it away. Anyway, so it's acre feet, and that's what you're going to deal with, and that's what you ought to call it. Anyway, 34,000 acre feet underrun. That means every acre that these farmers wanted to farm was farmed. And out of that, there was 34,000 extra acre feet. That goes to Metropolitan Water District, and I was misquoted in the paper. He said he had me saying it goes to Mexicali. I did not mention the word Mexicali. But anyway, it goes to Metropolitan Water District for free. So you won't see the necessity for breathing machines. You won't need the breather because every acre that was going to be farmed was farmed. That said, there's a flyer came out today. It was a little bit ugly, bad-mouthing the heck out of me for calling Dianne Feinstein a bureaucratic gas bag, pig-eyed sack of crap. Okay, I did that, and I was sitting, oddly enough, in this chair right here when a reporter brought it up here, and we
Thank you, Mr. Kuhn, for 3 minutes. No. Mr. Childers, your 3 minutes, sir.
Yes, thank you. I'd like to begin by thanking CoLab, President Snow, and Mrs. Percola for all the effort and hard work they've put into bringing this very important event and opportunity for public discourse on important issues into place so that we could all be here tonight. So thank you. My name is Ryan Childers, and I'm a candidate for the IID Board of Directors for Division 2 because the IID is one of the most important institutions in our community, and the issues that it faces and the decisions that are made here at this dais are incredibly complex, and they have lasting and will have lasting consequences, not just for us today, but for future generations of Imperial Valley residents. And so I believe because of the importance of the IID that it is critical that we elect leaders who have the education, experience, and values to effectively lead the IID and make the decisions necessary to ensure that future generations have and enjoy a more prosperous future than we have seen ourselves. I believe that my education as an accountant, an attorney, my experience as a lawyer, businessman, a coach, a parent, a volunteer, I believe that all of that combined with my 12 years on a school board make me uniquely qualified to step up and represent our community in this very important position of serving as an IID director. I believe that it's important that the IID take its rightful position of leadership on the issues that matter most to our community, issues like protecting and preserving our water rights, issues like addressing the calamity that's occurring at the Salton Sea, keeping our power rates low and affordable, and demanding action on the New River. And that's why I'm running. As a parent and a business owner, I have a vested interest in working to make sure that our community improves, that we protect our water rights, that we maintain our way of life here in the Imperial County. This is where my roots are, this is where my home is, and more importantly, this is where my heart and children are. And I am pledging to you that I will work with everything I have to make the IID more efficient, effective, and better able to assist us as we work and fight to preserve our way of life and our birthright. And because of that, I ask for your vote on March 3rd, and I appreciate your attention and your attendance here tonight. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Childers. We will now ask questions prepared by CoLab. The time allotted, again, for these questions will be 2 minutes for each candidate. We will start based on a drawing for the order, and we'll proceed in a random order. Question number one, and we will be starting with Mr. McFadden. The question is, the volume of water allocated to the Imperial Irrigation District from the Colorado River is 3.1 million acre feet per calendar year. About 18% of this transferred contractually outside of the area. In 2026, Bureau of Reclamation will establish new guidelines for water allocation for all seven states. In the event of a reduction to our volume by any amount, as an elected board member, how would you distribute this reduction to the contractual users to include industry here and to the Imperial Valley in general?
The first thing I'd do is that I'd like us to start planning for the future, working with the Water Conservation Board, the different ag groups, because We need to be this jointly. This impacts both of us, our community, the farm community, and the only way we can do a fairly deal is that we sit down and work together. We collaborate. We're partners. Right now, I think it's a very stressful relationship. We couldn't come to agreement on anything at this time. People are not respecting each other. And when someone comes to the podium, we need to listen. So though the first thing I will do is start right now and saying, hey, let's plan for the future. We know what's coming, what's going to be on the table. How can we benefit that? Business and ag can work together. When we work together, we look at bringing jobs to our Imperial Valley. Another partner that should be involved in that is the county. So the county, IID, water conservation, all need to be at the table at the same time. Discuss CoLab as another one because they represent the ag community. All the stakeholders, let's sit down, work together, exchange ideas. What are some of the recommendations from the farmers regarding this? What are some of the recommendations from CoLab? What are some of the recommendations from the county of Imperial, IID? But if we can gather all this information, the community should be involved. Because one of the things, I think there's a misconception, and I just realized this in the last 2 weeks or so, is the public does not really own the water. No one owns the water. The water is being used by the farm community, but no one really owns the water. I don't own the water. So I think we want people in the community to understand that, mm-hmm. and I don't think they understand that at this point in time.
Thank you, Mr. Thank McFadden. You. The same question, would you like me to repeat it? This is for Mr. Hamby.
I think I'm all right.
Okay.
So the issue with a potential reduction for the Bureau of Reclamation is actually not possible. We saw that in a drought contingency plan battle of late 2018. And basically what we discovered at that time is that we're transferring 18% of our entitlement down from 3.1 million acre feet to 2.6 million acre feet. The number 2.6 is very important because that's our present perfected right. And while the Secretary of the Interior does have certain powers under Arizona versus California, the decree that the Supreme Court made in that case, we also had another case also with the Supreme Court, Bryant v. Yellen. And what the court made very clear in that case is that the Secretary of the Interior and the Commissioner of the Bureau of Reclamation have limited powers over our present perfected rights. So from now until 2026, it is highly unlikely that we would enter into any reduction situations in which the Bureau would be involved. And if that was to attempt to happen, as Ms. Berman did in the last round of DCP, it wouldn't look good on her part. We would have to strongly stand up for what the case Bryant v. Yellen meant for Imperial Valley. And to finish up the question about apportionment and the absence of an EDP right now under the Abadi litigation, I think that that will probably, in all likelihood, be dealt with by the time I would be seated as your IID director for Division 2 at the end of this year in December. And so at that time, I think we'd be able to make a clearer determination on how to equitably distribute water. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hamby. Same question again for Mr. Childers. Would you like me to repeat the question, sir?
Sure.
Okay. The volume of water allocated to the Imperial Irrigation District from the Colorado River is 3.1 million acre feet per calendar year. About 18% of this is transferred contractually outside of the area. In 2026, Bureau of Reclamation will establish new guidelines for water allocation for all seven states. In the event of a reduction to our volume by any amount, as an elected board member, how would you distribute this reduction to the contractual user to include industry here and to the Imperial Valley in general? It's 2 minutes, sir.
Yeah, so the 3.1 million acre feet that IID has allocated on the river consists of 2.6 million acre feet, which are what we call present perfected rights, which have the deepest and strongest protection under the law. The Supreme Court has reiterated several times, whether it be California v. Arizona, Bryant v. Yellen, or in a variety of other agreements and court cases, that those 2.6 million acre feet are essentially untouchable because of the timing of when they were perfected and when the water was diverted and so forth. And so I have an issue with the premise of the question in that, might the Bureau attempt to reduce when these interim guidelines are being renegotiated prior to their expiration in 2026? Perhaps they will, but I think it's unlikely because they know they would be facing a very strong legal headwind. But should they do such a foolish thing, I think that it would be incumbent upon the IID board to stand up with all force and all strength that they can possibly muster and fight that and say, this cannot stand because these 2.6 million acre feet are our present perfected rights that our forefathers at the turn of the century protected for us as a result of their hard work in this barren landscape, turning it into the fertile valley that it is today. And some carpetbagger from San Diego or L.A. or anywhere else is not going to come in here and take that from us. Because when I refer to our birthright, that's what I'm referring to. And so we would have to beat that back at every turn and fight it in court. And I'm confident that we would be successful and no such reduction would be allowed to take place. So that's the approach I would take. I wouldn't ask anybody to take a cut because asking us to take a cut would be unlawful and it wouldn't stand.
Thank you, Mr. Childers. Mr. Kuhn, same question?
Oddly enough, the attempt has already been made, but it was made back in about 2002 when the federal government took 200,000 acre feet of our water. And that was not with our permission. That was during the quantification settlement agreement and the transfer agreement. And we did fight. But they took it as a salvo across our bow to let us know that if we didn't do the transfer, that they were going to be mischievous and come down and take it whenever they could. We fought them in court. We got the 200,000 back, but they had taken it. This is not a new fight. We fought them and we won. We got that back. And when it comes to present perfected rights at 2.6, I submit to you people in this audience that when I got on this board in 1996, the board prior to me had included present and perfected rights in the water transfer of San Diego. I didn't start the San Diego transfer talks. I got in when they had already started. They had included, our people here had allowed San Diego, or was going to allow San Diego, to have 200,000 acre feet of present and perfected rights. And as it's been said on this board, those are sacred. Those are etched in stone. Those are cast in concrete. No one can get them. And the Bureau cannot take those away, not without one hellacious fight. However, they did take 200. That wasn't down to 2.6. But San Diego had 200,000 in their contract. And I threw a rubber-legged fit up there, and I said, not going to happen, never going to happen, not as long as I'm on this board, not as long as I'm alive. And I came home. It was the weekend. Monday morning, I got a call. They said, are you sitting down? No, I'm driving. Well, pull over. They took them out. They took them out because you scared them. I didn't take it to my board. Didn't have time taking my board. 200,000, the present perfected rights that everybody's sitting there telling you are sacred. They are sacred.
Mr. Kuhn, that was 2 minutes. Question. Our times, I'm sorry. Question number two. And we'll start with Mr. Kuhn on this one. In 2014, IID increased the energy rates by 7%. There is talk about another increase in 2021. What is your position on this rate increase and why? 2 minutes, sir.
I'm sorry. Will you repeat that?
Again? In 2014, IID increased the energy rates by 7%. There is talk about another increase in 2021. What is your position on this rate increase and why?
Okay, if there's talk about one in 2021, I've certainly not been advised of it. The one in 2014 was absolutely necessary because the prior board, prior to 2012, you got a little charge on your bill. It's called ECA. What they'd done, they lost $300 million in a gas hedging fund, $300 million of your ratepayer money. They lost it. They had to get it back. The ECA is supposed to be floating. And when it was up, they locked it. When the price of natural gas came down, they didn't bring the ECA down. That's how they made the money. It's an illegal rate increase, but they did it. But people didn't know they had a rate increase because they didn't know what was going on. When I got back on here, I said, that is never intended to be static, and it needs to float. We started floating it. We started giving money back on your power bills. Now, we had to do something. There had not been a power increase in 20 years. Now, the price of gas has gone up. The price of everything's gone up. You can't operate this IID with a rate that was 20 years old. So we had to, as unpopular as it was, set a rate. Even with the new rate, we are still 25 to 30% lower than the rest of California. But we did it because they were taking money through the ECA, and that's not the way they were supposed to do it.
Thank you, Mr. Kuhn. Same question for Mr. McFadden. Would you like me to repeat the question?
Would you please?
In 2014, IID increased the energy rates by 7%. There is talk about another increase in 2021. What is your position on this rate increase and why? 2 minutes.
Two things. One, I believe there's a $65 million where they took money from the consumers, the ratepayers, sitting in IID right now. Two, I would not vote for a rate increase as things stand now. The third point is that the public needs to be involved if we're even just considering it, thinking about it. I'm sure there has to be public hearings, but the community, I have not heard anything. I want to think ahead, not waiting to the federal government or the energy department comes to us and we'll say we're in trouble. But these candidates made statements and no one brought up the issue about community involvement. I personally, at this point, with what I know, would not support a rate increase.
Thank you, Mr. McFadden. Mr. Hamby, same question.
Thank you. I don't know how much more clear I could be than this. This is my pledge to the voters of the Imperial Irrigation District Division 2 and much more to the entirety of the Imperial Valley and also to the Coachella Valley, which we serve also. This is my pledge to you over the next 4 years. I, J.B. Hamby, pledge to the ratepayers of the Imperial Irrigation District that it will oppose any and all efforts to raise power rates. I believe that we can find efficiencies. Sometimes it takes a lot of time, and it takes effort, and it even takes investment to find savings. But I don't believe in any case or any circumstances that we should burden excess costs on the backs of our ratepayers. People need to pay their mortgage and pay their rent, put shoes on their kid, and I don't believe that we should burden excess costs on the ratepayers. It's my pledge, whether it's 2021, 2022, 2023, or 2024, the end of this term, that I will be supporting any rate increase at all. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hamby. Mr. Childers, same question. Would you like me to repeat it?
No, thank you. Currently in the rate stabilization account, the IID is carrying a reserve of $66 million, $17 million in the energy cost adjustment account that has been accumulated as a result of an overcharge, as Mr. Kuhn talked about, that's been in place for quite some time. And so I think before we begin looking seriously at a rate increase, we need to look at our ability to expend those funds to offset a rate increase. But there's a reason why, as was pointed out in one of the candidates' opening statements, that I have specifically said that I will work to keep our power rates low and affordable. They're currently the lowest in the state of California. And that's because with experience, one realizes that making such concrete statements, not knowing what the future might bring, may put one in a position where they're not able to live up to the promise that they've made. So let's say that some disaster, God forbid, was foisted upon our community, and a large swath of our energy infrastructure was cut down from a hurricane or a bad earthquake, and there was a need to raise funds to replace that infrastructure. We just don't know what tomorrow holds, and so what I can tell you is what my values are. And my values are that our ratepayers should continue to enjoy the lowest rates in the state of California, but we also have to be careful with what we say and not make promises that we don't know that we can deliver on because we don't know what tomorrow holds. And so my pledge to you is that that is a core value, and I will work and fight for that. But I'm also not going to look you in the eye and say there's no way any day ever that I will vote for a rate increase, because there might be a time when it's necessary for all of our good. And if that's the case, I'll make that vote, and I'll be able to look you in the eye and tell you why I did it. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Childers. Question number three. IID was unilaterally blocked from participation in the drought contingency in early 2019 for a number of reasons. But at the core, IID's position on the Salton Sea is the Salton Sea and its impact on air quality here really an IID issue? Please explain your answer. We'll start with Mr. Childers.
Well, so the responsibility to pay for the environmental mitigation at the Salton Sea is clearly the state's responsibility because they agreed to take on that responsibility in their contractual obligations under the quantification settlement agreement in 2003. Now, unfortunately, the legislation that they passed after that did not allocate funding to do that. Now, since then, there has been funding allocated to begin to address the issues at the Salton Sea, including a 10-year plan that they allocated a couple $100 million to that was supposed to begin in 2018. Here we are, 2020, and they're already 2 years behind on that plan. So does the IID have a role to play? Absolutely. The IID has a critical role to play. We need to be the advocates for getting it addressed. We are the contractual party that has the contract with the state of California that says they'll address the mitigation efforts, and we need to hold them to account to do that. But I think the federal government also has a responsibility. They're one of the larger landowners of land in and around the sea, and so they also happen to have the deepest pockets, and they need to step up to the plate and do their part. I had the opportunity today to meet with staff members from one of the major presidential campaigns, and the first thing I brought up in discussing with them local issues they could take back to their candidate was the Salton Sea and the New River and the role that the federal government has to play. And I think that that's what our leaders have been doing and need to continue to do in a bigger and louder way, is every time we sit down with a senator, the governor, or anybody else who has a role to play, the Salton Sea and the New River need to be the first thing we mention and the last thing we mention, and we need to let them know that we're not going to go away and be treated like second-class citizens because they want to forget about us and not write the check. They're obligated to do it. They need to do what's right. Imperial County is part of California, and we deserve the same clean air and clean water as the rest of the state and the rest of the country.
Thank you, Mr. Childers. Mr. Coons, same question. Would you like to repeat it?
No. And we are not members of the, we are not signatories on DCP, because the first time it came up to vote here, I wouldn't vote for it because I was afraid that if we did, then we would be contractually obligated to go along with whatever the majority of the signatories did. And I still believe that. And I was able to convince the rest of my board that we needed to look at this and that we needed to get some kind of a fix for the Salton Sea out of it. And Director Hank certainly grabbed that and ran with it, and that's a good thing. So they didn't want to address the Salton Sea, so we did not sign it. So the Salton Sea did weigh heavily on our reasons for not doing that. Now, it's been said here this evening that the federal government needs to get engaged on the Salton Sea. Well, I guess they do. I don't think they know that, but you see, we have raw sewage coming in here from Mexicali on a routine basis, daily basis, and it goes into what? The New River. Where does the New River dump? Salton Sea. Ooh, that's a federal problem. Now, we're trying to get the state to clean it up. The federal government's allowing raw sewage to run through the New River from Mexicali. Now, my question is, who's responsible? Feds and the state. However, as was said here today, and I was on the negotiating team that got this done, the state is contractually obligated to take care of all mitigation caused by the San Diego transfer to the Salton Sea. Not to restore the sea. They passed the Salton Sea Restoration Act in the state legislature, but they didn't give it an appropriation. So they're morally obligated to restore it, but they didn't give it an appropriation. So yes, state's responsible for the mitigation of any damage from the transfer, contractually obligated. The federal government, because of that New River, they got a problem.
Thank you, Mr. Coon. Same question for Mr. Hamby.
Yes, and in relation to this question, I want to reference something that was mentioned in the opening statements, is that the water transfers have nothing to do with air quality in Imperial Valley. And there is nothing that could be farther than the truth than that. I've been out at Red Hill Bay near Nylon and Calipatria. You go out there on a windy day. I wasn't able to make it yesterday. But what you would have seen yesterday, as I've seen throughout the year as I visited on windy days, is total whiteout conditions. You can't see 6 feet in front of your car. All you can see is your headlight beams. That is the impact of this transfer on the Salton Sea. Nobody who's the beneficiary of the transfers wants to talk about it, much less our so-called partners in these transfers, and much less the Department of the Interior and those who are benefiting from this. They don't want to untangle that. They want to do more of the same of what they did in 2003. So let's be clear about that. 100 billion gallons of water every year is the major reason for the decline of the Salton Sea ecosystem and public health catastrophe in Imperial County. And as reference to the New River as well, that's been a problem we've experienced for the last 80 years. It is a total disaster at the New River. There have been mild improvements, but we can't wait another 80 years to see some mild improvement sometime in the future. What's in the New River today ends up in our lungs tomorrow. As these transfers continue, if they do continue, the exposing of 70,000 acres at the Salton Sea of horribly emissive playa ends up in our lungs. We're going to be breathing this in. There'll be more inhalers. There'll be more nebulizers. There'll be more sick people. Ultimately, we have to push for action on this in 2026. Those things need to be resolved. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Hamby. Mr. McFadden, same question. Would you like me to repeat it?
One of the things, first things that I would do, ask for a meeting with the board members of IID, the board of supervisors, and let's put together a team with one message. The Farm Bureau would be a part of it. We'd have a lot of stakeholders going to Sacramento. I would test the theory. IID spends a lot on consultants in Sacramento. The county spends a lot on consultants. Why can't they come together and say, hey, I want to see if they can bring the governor down here so he can see personally. Because the money in the budget, the state has taken 20 years. The state has not done nothing. You know, we can't be doing the same old thing the same old way. Let's try something new. Let's put some pressure on the governor. Want the governor to come to Imperial Valley and with these outstanding consultants that IID have, the outstanding consultants that the county have, let's bring them together because the same ratepayers' money and say, we like to have the governor come down to Imperial Valley, to Salton, the New River, and for him to give us a commitment because the budget is starting. We don't know if that 200-some million is going to be there in June the way they do business. You know, so I'm just saying that I can't trust the state because they have an untrustworthy track record. So let's, again, do something different and get out ahead of the game. All these things are happening, and we're not reacting. Everybody's playing hardball. We're playing T-ball. Softball. We need to get tough. We need to show those agencies, the water companies, that we're not playing. We have board members that don't even attend these meetings. So when you don't attend, people take advantage of you. So I'm hoping that I would bring a person to bring people together, and let's save the taxpayers some dollars by utilizing.
Thank you, Mr. McFadden.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that concludes our questions, the first three. We're now going to go through questions from the audience, and there are no names as to who submitted these questions. So, gentlemen, we'll start with the first one. And the question is, we have heard that there is a shortage of power due to lack of sufficient substations in a number of communities in Imperial County and the Coachella Valley. Individual development projects are being told that they will have to pay for and build the substations at IID's prevailing wage cost and will still need to pay normal power rates, which often creates a non-financeable condition. This is deterring economic development in the region, which affects all of the population. Prior to this new and unofficial policy, All substation development here and in Coachella Valley were included in the cost borne by the ratepayer. If elected for this term, what is your position on this unofficial policy? And we'll start with Mr. Childers.
My position on this unofficial policy is, as you put it, is that it's dead wrong and it's dangerous. But I think before we go out and start making investments between $8 and $12 million apiece for the construction of a substation, we first need to review the district's policy with respect to what are called will serve letters. And so basically, if you're a developer and you want to bring in a new project, you go to the IID and you say, do you have the power to serve this project? And then they provide you with a will serve letter, which is essentially a legal commitment that they'll actually have the power to provide the power you need for your project. The problem is that we had a bunch of will serve letters that were brought about in the real estate boom, let's call it, leading up to the crash in 2007, 2008. And those are still on the books in many cases, showing on paper that we have a power capacity issue. But if we were to devise a policy that said will serve letters have, say, a shelf life of some appropriate amount of time, talking to developers, finding out what would be appropriate, you know, 36 months, 60 months, something like that, and then they go off and they're not being counted against what our capability is in terms of power availability, that would serve to start to solve part of the issue. But at some point, we're going to have to make the investment. And I think it's unfair to ask a developer who's coming in to build a project that's going to create economic development for our community to have to foot the cost of an $8 to $12 million piece of infrastructure that essentially is the conduit by which the district is going to sell them power. It'd be like a store telling its customer, you need to build my store for me so I can sell you what you want to buy. And it just doesn't work that way. And it will create a chokehold on economic development in our county if projects – if a developer's told, hey, you want to build this $2 million office building? Well, you've also got to build a $12 million substation. No developer in the world is going to do that. And so we need to be in a position where the IID is allocating resources to build these substations.
Thank you, Mr. Childers. Mr. Kuhn, the same question. Would you like me to repeat it?
No.
The will serve letters were issued to multiple entities that we're going to build here. Some of them are not even here. And it is true that some of those were still on the books. To date, I don't know anyone who's come in here that wanted to build that hasn't been able to build, because we have been finding these expired, for lack of a better term, will serve letters, and we've been rewriting them, and people are able to go. Now, when it comes to the infrastructure, I think it's most important to understand that the IID is a no-profit organization. In other words, whatever we get in is supposed to cover whatever goes out. That comes off the back of the ratepayers. And if you're going to – if we aren't like the private-owned utilities, the for-profit utilities. Their rate structure – is structured such that when every bill that goes out, it's shotgunned out there, and it's on everybody's bill. So when they go for infrastructure, the money is there, because that's that 30% more that they're paying on their bills. We don't get that. We're 25 to 30% lower than everybody else. So when we have developers come in, there may be a time when they have to perhaps share in cost for a subdivision. But to date, I don't know of any of them that have had to bear the entire cost. And I don't know of anyone that hasn't built here because they wanted to, because they couldn't get power.
Thank you, sir. Mr. McFadden, same question.
The idea, I think things sneak up on us. We're reacting. We need to get out and ahead of the type of issues. The Energy Department needs to tell us what our infrastructure capacity is, how we plan for the future, because all this gets down to planning. Are we going to be the same today, 5 years from now, or 10 years from now? Then we want to do economic development. We want to grow Imperial County. we need to plan. Planning is essential, and do a joint planning process with the county, CoLab, their business department, because I hate to see us lose business, lose economic development projects because of lack of planning. You know, so I think it's a lack of planning. I think we need to bring stakeholders together and see what's happening with those. How are these things happening? What policies do we have in place right now to deal with these issues? But again, I think it starts with planning.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Hamby, same question. Would you like me to repeat it?
I'm all right. Thank you. So I think that the IID policy is designed to protect the ratepayer, and perhaps in some occasions a split is better, especially for small businesses. But ultimately, the cost has to be borne by those who are intending to profit. Our rates should not rise to pay for profits, and El Centro, Heber, and Sealy should not have to subsidize Coachella Valley sprawl. So if there are any changes to be made, perhaps permanent ones, making this instead of an informal policy into a formal one, it should be involving full stakeholder participation. But my ultimate view on this is that the ratepayers' pocket should not be emptied to subsidize economic growth for someone else, somewhere else.
Thank you, sir. Our next question. The IID recently voted to require project labor agreements, PLAs, for all IID work, including that by outside contractors. The last IID project that required PLA was in 2016 at the battery storage facility at the El Centro Steam Plant. The extra cost to IID for the PLA work was $3.4 million, as verified by the change order approved by IID. What is your position on this type of increased cost for IID projects that will result in increased costs to the ratepayer? We'll start with Mr. Childers.
I get this one next as well. Okay, perfect. Happy to do it. So we live in the state of California, and I think we all recognize that labor plays an important role in the state of California, in politics and elsewhere. And I've been on the front lines of dealing and negotiating and building relationships with labor unions for the last three terms that I've served on school boards. I mean, that's right in your face, dealing with and building relationships when you're negotiating over things like compensation and work conditions and so forth. And I'm proud to say that I have the support of our former union president at the high school district, and I think that's a testament to the working relationship I've been able to build. But having said that, as an IID board member or a board member in any other capacity, we have an obligation to do what's right for the whole community and what's right for our ratepayers. And so while project labor agreements are useful in certain circumstances, for instance, bigger projects where it's difficult to get the skilled labor, they can serve a purpose there. But I have a concern with making a blatant PLA that would cover all IID projects. There is some legal authority out there that suggests that the federal government may not recognize blanket PLAs, and that could cause some difficulty with federal funding and federal overlap that we have in our jurisdiction. And so that would obviously need to be looked at. But my biggest concern is the fact that my understanding is we only have two union shops that are contractors down here. And so essentially, you would be creating a situation where if there's a blanket PLA, that these non-union contractors would not be able to bid on IID projects. And so I think that there's a path forward where through communication and people of goodwill sitting down at the table, trying to come to a resolution that serves everyone, that we can get there. But I don't believe in the current form, as I understand
it,
it's been submitted, that it's going to work best for the community and the IID.
Mr. Hamby, same question. You'd like to repeat it?
I'm all right. Thank you very much. I understand that there is a strong appetite by the majority of the board with three board members to approve APLA in whatever capacity, and it looks that those three viewpoints are very firm. Here are my priorities if elected and when elected to this board. First of all, the most important thing for me is local hires. When the dollars are spent and paid for in Imperial County and those dollars stay here, they continue to bounce from place to place to place, from business to grocery store, and everywhere in between. So the local hire is the most important function that I think is a part of any agreement that's agreed to by this board. And then also that it's not going to create rate pressure that will then be burdened onto the ratepayers. I know that the County of Imperial has operated with PLA successfully. I think that could be learned from. I can't judge any IID PLA right now because it doesn't exist. And I'm running to ensure that any agreement protects and promotes our local workforce, hiring, apprenticeships, and training, and does not cause a rate increase, that we can create those jobs here, that they stay here, and we have a strong economy as a result of it. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. McFadden, same question.
I, at the present time, I would take an independent view of this. I'm very familiar with the local unions that are here, but I want to be independent. I don't want to make any commitment because I said earlier, I don't want to vote for any rate increases. Will these projects impact the county, IID, for a rate increase? So I want to be consistent with no rate increases, and I would not be one to make a commitment to the PLA at this time. You know, so I want to see more, hear more, and keep my options open at this time.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Kuhn, same question.
I would like, for the benefit of the audience, not for me, but I'd like you to read that question again because there's a bit of a misnomer in it, and I'd like them to hear it.
The question is, the IID recently voted to require project labor agreements, PLAs, for all IID work, including that by outside contractors. The last IID project that required PLA was in 2016 at the battery storage facility at the El Centro Steam Plant. The extra cost to IID for that PLA work was $3.4 million, as verified by change order approved by IID. What is your position on this type of increased cost for IID projects that will result in increased cost to the ratepayer?
Okay. The first part of that question is we voted to include a PLA. We did not vote to include a PLA. We took a vote to sit down and negotiate with those who are interested in having a PLA. But at this current time, no PLA was passed. And by the way, I got chewed out in a very public setting in a restaurant here by a most irate non-contractor, and he let me know how stupid we were, how dumb it was, how asinine the entire board was for passing that. And I'm trying to explain to him, we didn't pass anything. There is no PLA in place at this time. We gave direction to, and a vote was taken, to have our people sit down with the union reps and see what it would take or what a PLA would look like. And they're going to bring that information back to the board, and then and only then would we make a decision. But no decision has been made yet.
Thank you, sir. Our next question. As an IID director, one of the responsibilities is to represent IID on other boards and various committees. The majority of those meetings are outside the Imperial Valley. Is there any reason that you would be unable to travel outside the Imperial Valley to participate in those meetings? And we'll start with Mr. McFadden.
If I'm going to be an effective director, I would say I'd have to be available to attend all outside meetings. So, no, there's no reason for me not to attend. I would be willing to attend, and I understand the urgency of attending because so many agencies have us under siege that it's very important that a director be there to defend Imperial Valley.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Kuhn, same question.
Having been on the board for 15 years, I can assure you that I have spent my fair share of time in other cities. I have testified on the Hill in Washington, D.C. in congressional hearings. And that had everything to do with fighting for our water. I have spent many, many times, many trips in Sacramento, in the state capital. Twice, the governor was at the table fighting for our water rights. There was a time there I went 8 times in 8 weeks to Sacramento. I went to the State Water Resource Control Board in 2014 and testified because of my knowledge of the transfer, because of my knowledge of the quantification settlement agreement. And that testimony was what jump started the state to start living up to their obligation. Have they done it fully? No. But they weren't doing anything, and that testimony got them started. So, yes, I go out of town. Oh, and when I do go out of town, I pay my own way. I do not have an IID credit card, and I do not charge the IID. I have my own phone. I do not charge the IID when I go out of town, but I go out of town.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Hamby, same question.
Yes. So for me, I believe that it is vitally important to do this. Myself personally, not being an IID board member, I've put I don't know how many tens of thousands of miles on my trusty Prius over the past 9 months, traveling across the Colorado River Basin. 2 days after I graduated from school, I went to Spoke at the State Water Resource Control Board, talked about the Salton Sea to various board members there who I talked to. Afterwards, I've traveled this basin over these 20 conferences and learned a lot at some personal cost, but I believe that that is the sort of thing that is absolutely vital and indispensable from now until 2026. That's a long period of time, 6 years, but it all begins now when those 2026 negotiations begin basically at the end of this year. We have natural allies across the Colorado River Basin. It's not been something we've done historically, really, since the 1930s, when Phil Swing and crew were active, as you can see them on the board up there. But we have natural allies in Arizona, Colorado, Wyoming, and other places across the Colorado River Basin, rural, tribal, small agricultural communities. I've talked to them. I've made relationships across this basin in my small capacity as Joe Blow, JB, perhaps. And that's what I look forward to doing, especially over this next 4 years as your IID director. I think it's vitally important, and that investment in time will pay dividends over the next century in Imperial Valley.
Thank you, Mr. Hamby. Mr. Childers, same question, sir.
Yes, my decision to run for the IID Board of Directors was not a decision that I took lightly. It was the result of discussions with my wife and even my children about the time obligations that would be required in order to serve the community and do it right. And so before I endeavored to run for this position, this was something I gave careful consideration to. And I can say without any reservation that I will be able to travel. I will be able to do whatever is necessary to do this job right and in the most effective manner for our community. I think that it's vital that our board members are out building relationships and making connections with agencies from the other seven basin states so that as we are beginning to negotiate the new interim guidelines that come due in 2026 or even further down the road, our agreement that allows us to provide power in Coachella Valley is going to be coming up in 2033. And so we need to begin to have those conversations now. And effective negotiation, in my experience, is often built with some type of relationship as a foundation from which you can then begin to negotiate. But if you go into it cold with strangers, it can become difficult and troublesome in some cases. So I intend to travel, work, build relationships with other stakeholders so that when the tough negotiations come, we have a starting point to begin from that's not just essentially a cold call.
Thank you, sir. Our next question, gentlemen. Do you believe our water is under attack? If so, what is your plan to defend it, and who are the attackers? We'll start with Mr. Hamby.
Great question. Our water is under attack presently, and it's only going to get worse. That's why I have these pledge cards here. I believe that the greatest protection of Imperial Valley's water is to ensure that it stays here and is put to use here. I want to read this very briefly because every word is really important. I believe in a two-third public vote for any new water to leave Imperial Valley. I don't think that it's fair to any IND board to be burdened with the decision of permanent decisions that will commit our water to be moved elsewhere. That's why I wrote this, and this is what I look forward to introducing as your IID director for Division 2. A two-third affirmative vote of the public shall be required in a general election to authorize the Imperial Irrigation District to seek, propose, enter into, or otherwise facilitate a voluntary, new or enlarged transfer, sale, lease, compensated forbearance, or other generation of additional conserved Colorado River water to be made available for use outside of the Imperial Irrigation District water service area. It's only by returning that power back to the people that we can ensure that when our water is under attack, and it's only going to get worse, that the people are ultimately in control of that decision. It's happened before in 1911 when the IID was created by public vote of the people, and in 1919 with the authorization of the All-American Canal. I think 101 years later, at that point, whatever the math is, sorry, that ultimate power is restored to the people, that the people can decide whether this water leaves this valley. That's the only way that our water will be preserved for generations to come. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. McFadden, same question, sir.
In my opening statement, I talked about agriculture being under attack. We need to protect it, but we need to protect it as a community. We cannot protect it with us all going different ways, sending different messages. We need to talk with one voice. The county, IID, need us to be on the same page. The public, we need to engage in the process. Stakeholders, I definitely feel that agriculture is under attack, water-wise on a local level. I understand the body case. The body case has been being dealt with through the judge and the court system, so that should play itself out. In the meantime, we have other issues of respect, ag community. I don't know if their voices are being heard. All I see is negatives at the IID meetings, and you know what's really troubling about the negative is okay, but when someone doesn't, people don't stand up for what they accepted, I think that's wrong. They need to be held accountable. You cannot disrespect the ag community, CoLab. We need to work together. You have a lot of good members that have a lot of different interests, so we would like to join forces, I think, would be critical. So I still say that there's a lot of ag, and the water's under attack, and we need to fight vigorously. We need to fight with one message, you know, and let them know that we're not going to roll over for anyone outside, and we're going to deal with our inside issues. We can't attack each other. We need to do that in private, you know, but if you continue to disrespect me in public, I'm going to have an attitude, and that's just the way I feel, that you have to treat the community with respect.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Childers, the same question, sir.
So our allocation of Colorado River water represents 70% of the total 4.4 million acre feet allocated to California. It represents 20% of the overall available water allocated on the Colorado River overall, and something like 40% of the lower basin's allocation. So as these communities in the West that rely on Colorado River water look to grow and expand, there's really only one place to come and get the water, and that's from us. And so anyone who doesn't recognize that, whether it's currently being done overtly, that our water rights are and will continue to be under attack, is not living in reality, because this is the place where the most water is. And so I think that the fight over our water rights is an existential fight for the future of the valley. I don't think that that is overstating the stakes that are in play in this fight. So having said that, I think that it's incumbent upon the IID board and all of the stakeholders to make sure that we're We continue to use water in the most effective and beneficial manner so that our rights can't come into question. And we also need to be planning in a long-range and strategic manner the way that we are going to rebuff the expected attacks that we know that we will be getting in the future as these other entities try and dip their straw into our water, as it were, and take as much as they possibly can. And so I believe that I am prepared to take on that fight and add to that discourse and provide my strategic thinking and thought and bring my experience and education to bear to represent the Valley in this fight that is more important than any other fight that we've ever waged.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Kuhn, same question, sir.
You know, it's increasingly difficult to explain all this in 2 minutes because, you know, you can't jam 15 years into 2 minutes, but I'm going to try. Look, this thing about the two-thirds vote of the people, you got to know people that sounds good and it's fuzzy and feely and it feels good. First things first, this board is elected by the people that live in the irrigation district. Every single one of them vote for now their division. So, yeah, it's already two-thirds. In fact, it's about 100% that vote for this board. So if you don't like what's going on, and it's evident here today, you can come here and change things if change needs to be changed. So you've got your vote. You've always had it. It's not new. And to pledge two-thirds, well, first things first, I don't know that can be done, but it would be very difficult to do so if it were able to be done. However, you've got your vote. You've already got it. And when it comes to our water here in this valley and people trying to take it out, I want you to understand, the Bass Brothers from Fort Worth, Texas came in here. They bought up 42,000 acres. They were going to dry it up, take the water, sell it to Metropolitan. Not San Diego, it was Metropolitan. I got on the board. We fought them. They realized that with the current law, the way it is, you cannot transfer water out of this valley without the expressed written permission of the board of directors of the Imperial Irrigation District. All this nonsense about trying to scare people that it can be taken and we're under attack. We are under attack, but you cannot transfer water out of this valley without the expressed written permission of the majority of the board of directors of Imperial County. They did in Blythe, but that's 1 acre, one vote. They're completely different than us. And you got to know that the company that did that to them, that bought that land up there and sold it to Met, sold that community out. They are currently here buying ground now. So if you want to fear something, better fear that.
Thank you, Mr. Kuhn. Our next question, and this one is for Mr. Kuhn. Sir, you stated at the IBC Candidates Forum last Saturday that it is time for the dive team to go. If the other board members agree, how will those members of the dive team be repurposed?
Well, first things first, to serve on the dive team, they were being repurposed. They would go back to what they were doing. I mean, most of those guys were in our emergency management department. They're still there. They were pulled out of their respective areas, and some of them served. Some of them were in heavy equipment. Some of them were mechanics. We brought them in to do the dive team. The dive team disbanded. They go back to what they were doing full time.
Thank you, sir. Our next question, this will be for all four of you. What is your position is a public vote required, a two-thirds majority vote for any additional transfer of the water from Imperial Valley? And let me reread it. I got confused. What is your position on a public vote that requires a two-thirds majority vote for any additional transfer of water from Imperial Valley? And we'll start with Mr. McFadden.
As a community advocate and getting the public involved, I would support that. You know, I think the community needs to be more engaged in the actions of the board. Such a big issue. You know, I think that's one that merits the public input. IID did the best they could when they went for the transfer the first time. I think it's brought a lot of economic development to county, to IID. I think it's IID made a lot of improvements in their system off of someone else's dime. But again, the bottom line decision of this magnitude should be taken to the public and get the public input in it.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Hamby, same question.
A couple comments ago, you heard that you cannot move water out of Imperial Valley without a vote of the IID board. Simply, what I'm suggesting with a two-third public vote is similarly, you cannot move water outside of Imperial Valley without a people's vote. If the people are able to vote for an IID director, they should be able to vote to ensure that our water stays here, not today, not for a decade, but for forever. That's what this proposal does, is it ensures that the people have the ultimate say, that it's not the board, it's not anybody else, but that the people have the ultimate say over a drop of water leaving this valley. We can't allow any more to leave. We have to put it to use here for everyone's benefit, for the benefit of the environment, for the benefit of our culture, for the benefit of our people and our cities that are not using enough water. We need to use all of it here. And the only way to protect that in the long term is to ensure that that high threshold, 66% or more of the people are able to vote for a drop of water to leave this valley. I don't believe they'll ever do that, and that's why we need this.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Childers.
Well, I think at first blush, the idea of having a two-thirds vote in order to transfer water, it sounds nice. But I'm afraid that it's just a political gimmick, because the reality is, our republic was founded as not a direct democracy, but as a representative democracy, where our electorate votes to put elected leaders into position so that they can educate themselves and achieve some measure of expert status in looking at and making decisions of this nature. I also have a concern that it doesn't reflect the reality of serving on a board. When you serve on a board and you have to make very important public decisions, sometimes you have to make decisions in a very quick manner. You have to respond to conditions on the ground. And the idea of convening a special election of the entire county in order to address something that would typically be within the purview of the board or has always been within the purview of the IID board just does not make a lot of sense, and it doesn't reflect the reality of governing as a board member. So having said that, I have great concerns. The voters' options are to not elect people that hold positions that are going to transfer water out. I've made clear that I will not support transfers. I think just about everybody up here has made clear. And if someone deviates from that, then they're to be held to account for that. And that is the process. But we also have to realize that and there's a reason why we have representative democracy, not direct democracy in most cases, is because the electoral process is subject to manipulation. Voters have been sold, myself included, at some point in the past, I'm sure, a bill of goods that's packaged really nicely, that seems like it's in your interest, and then lo and behold, after the thing is done, it's not what it seemed to be. And so I would be very fearful of creating a situation where our electorate could potentially be duped, myself included, as a voter here, by some bill of goods that would permanently affect our water rights.
Mr. Kuhn, same question, sir.
Damn, you stole my thunder. Again, this sounds really good. Two-thirds vote of the voters, a two-thirds majority. If you don't live in the boundaries of the irrigation district, you cannot vote on irrigation district issues. So you cannot include everybody in Imperial County. Palo Verde could not vote. Winter Haven could not vote. Ocotillo could not vote. Salton City could not vote. They're county, but they're not in the irrigation district. We serve them power. Yes, we do. Can they vote for us? No, they cannot. So when you say you want a two-thirds majority of the voters, you're automatically going to be excluded from doing that by virtue of where they live. So
You have a board that is elected by that boundary. We serve at the will of the people already. I don't know that certain, you know, you can only die once. And if you don't do what you're supposed to do for the people you represent, you will be voted off this board. Seen it. Hell, it happened to me. They didn't like the transfer after it, you know, came to be that it wasn't the worst thing in the world. Then I was reelected. But that's the way it works. If the voters don't like what you're doing, they vote you off. And it happens all the time. So you don't need that.
Thank you, sir. The next question is for Mr. Childers. Is that true? You originally intended to run for supervisor against Mr. Plancarte. What made you change your mind, and why did you originally want to run against Mr. Plancarte?
So, as stated, no, that is not true. I've been on the school board, as I've said, for three terms. I've come to a position in my practice and my family life where I have the time available to devote to a greater public service. And so when I began to evaluate where I might be of service, where I might put my skills and experience to work to benefit the community, the two obvious places to evaluate were a run for the Board of Supervisors or this particular seat. And I happen to be a friend of Mr. Plancarte's. I happen to think that Mr. Plancarte is doing an excellent job on the Board of Supervisors. And as they say, if it's not broke, don't fix it. But beyond that, as I looked at very closely at the issues that the IID is facing, as I looked at the role that a director plays, it became apparent to me immediately that the place that was best suited to my skill set and experience was a position right here on this IID board. And it became very clear to me that I could have the most impact in a position right here on this IID board. And that's why I decided to run for this position, out of a desire to serve the public in a way that can be most beneficial and nothing else. And I think that that's evident in the approach that I'm taking, the positions that I'm taking, that my goal is to serve the public and the public interest.
Thank you, sir. This next question is for Mr. Hamby. It says, from your statements on Facebook and at other public events, it appears that you wish to end the Quantified Settlement Agreement, the QSA, so that all 3.1 million acre-feet of water can be used for farming here. If that is a correct assessment of your position, what are the consequences of a breach to QSA agreement?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think we wouldn't dispute it that if the QSA were to be ended, the Imperial Valley would be a better place. Certainly the decision in 2003, I can't talk much about it at the time as I was 6 years old in first grade. But what I can say about it is that if we look at the Salton Sea, if we look at the period of fallowing that followed the QSA for a period of time, it has not made Imperial Valley a better place. That is to say, though, that we're stuck with these agreements as they are. But the ultimate point that has to be made clear there is there was three things promised in the QSA. Number one, that water would leave Imperial Valley to make up for the overuse of Metropolitan. Two, that money would come from San Diego to Imperial Valley through the Imperial Irrigation District. And three, that the state of California would honor the responsibility for restoration of the Salton Sea ecosystem, as they clarified at a later time. So my position is not blowing up the QSA, but my position is this, on my pledge card here, to hold the state of California accountable for its failure to meet its unmet responsibilities to the Salton Sea by all means necessary and required, including the declaration of a breach of the QSA water transfers if necessary. That's the only way we can ensure that the other parties are going to answer their side of the agreement without that strong language and ensuring that they answer their obligation at the Salton Sea and don't endanger the lives of the people who live here in Imperial Valley, who are going to see 70,000 acres of exposed playa at the Salton Sea, the total destruction of the fish population, a devastation of the bird population at the Salton Sea, and astronomically rising asthma rates in Imperial County, without making that clear that we're going to stand up for ourselves and ensure that other parties live up to their agreement, it's not going to get any better.
Thank you, sir. This next question is for Mr. Kuhn. It is your position that the community should not be concerned about the air quality in Imperial County. As a result of the, It is your position that the community should not be concerned about the air quality in Imperial County was a result of fallowed land. What data do you rely on for your position?
I don't ever recall not being concerned about the quality of air in Imperial County. I don't know where you got your information, but I mean, I don't know whoever asked that question that doesn't know me at all. Of course I care about the quality of air in Imperial County. And to say that the fallowing didn't cause a bit more dust, of course it did. But then every summer when crops are out and you see farmers working in their field, you're going to see an increased amount of emissive dust in the air anyway. And when it comes to the Salton Sea, yes, there is some playa blowing down there. That's indisputable. But it's also known that the majority of the emissive dust coming from the sea or off the sea is coming from the desert west of the Salton Sea. So you have a combined problem over there. You have the emissive dust from the desert, and you have the emissive dust from the exposed playa. We know that. It's up. The state is contractually obligated by contract to address those issues, and we have not stood idly by and let the state just slide. And there was something mentioned here that we need to get the governor here. Gavin Newsom was here. He was photographed at the Salton Sea when he was lieutenant governor. He knows about this. It's not new. He was here, and he was using it to as, I'll say, a springboard to get elected to governor. Okay, he did. And he did. He's governor, but he has been here, and he was here because we invited him down here when he was lieutenant governor, and he came here. He's not unaware of the problems, and your IID board got him down here.
Thank you, sir. Gentlemen, this concludes our questions because of the time. We're now going to go to the closing statements, and we'll start with Mr. Childers. 2 minutes, sir.
Yes, thank you. Again, I'd like to thank CoLab and all of you for attending and your attention here tonight. As I said in my opening remarks and as I said in answering some of the questions, I'm running for the IID board because I want to serve our community. And I believe that I have something to offer in serving the community. And so if elected, I can assure you that I will work tirelessly to protect and defend our water rights, address the issues at the Salton Sea, address the issues at the New River, and work to keep our power rates low and affordable. I'm working very hard to let you know where I stand on issues that I'm confident that I can keep the promises that I'm making to the voters. I'm not just saying what people want to hear to try and get elected. And I think that that's an invaluable quality in a leader, is someone who is willing to look you in the eye and tell you what's really going on, whether it's what you want to hear or not. And that's my pledge to you, is that I will give you that honesty as a leader, and I will always have the interest of this valley at heart in every decision I make. So please, on March 3rd, I'd appreciate your vote. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Kuhn.
Yes. Well, I'm going to finish my Feinstein thing. How about that? Since we're on first-name basis and she loves me. Look, it was said that, you know, we're going to fight for our water rights. We're going to do, well, we're going to keep power rates down. Your power rates are 25 to 30% lower now. There's no power increase for 2020. We have a balanced budget for 2020. There's no water increase for 2020. We have all that's already done. That fire and that fight is put out. There are no transfers pending. There's been about 10 resolutions saying there will be no more future transfers. There's no will on this board for another transfer. I don't want another transfer. No one that's sitting on this board wants another transfer. Now, what I said to our senator, I was sitting in this chair, and a letter was brought to me by the Imperial Valley Press reporter, and he showed it to me. It was the first time I'd seen it. And what it said was, and it was signed by her, whether it was auto pen or not, I don't know and I don't care, but it was her stationery and her signature, said, if you don't put this transfer together, I will bring the weight of the federal government to bear upon you. And I, geez. Okay. And now I have been to Washington. I have done all that, trying to get the best deal we could. And now I'm going to get this thing jammed down my throat. And then people say, I didn't fight for our water rights. You think that I kowtowed to her? No.
No. I took the senior senator of the state of California. I would expect, and I said, and I meant it, I would expect nothing less from a bureaucratic, gas-bag, pig-eyed sack of crap. Does that sound like you're kowtowing, or does that sound like you're fighting for your water rights? My God, I was fighting for our water rights. I was fighting for our life. And I did that. And by the way, when I did that, more doors opened up in Washington, D.C. for the Imperial Irrigation District than in the history had ever been opened, because they want to know what kind of crazy-ass people would talk to their senator like that. I did. Fighting for your water. And we won.
Thank you, sir. Our next statement, Mr. McFadden.
I started off by talking about who I'd like to represent. I'm going to represent all the citizens. I've talked about citizens not being at the table, voices that are not being heard. I talked about us being more aggressive in our fight. All the things that are happening, and we know they're happening, we need to start planning and getting engaged with the, you can't do the same old thing the same old way. You know, it's a new time for a lot of new things. And I just want to wish that all of you would consider me on March the 3rd to be your next IID director. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Hamby, 2 minutes.
Begin by saying it's one thing to defend our water rights, and it's another thing entirely to insult and demean our representatives. IID affects us all, beyond our monthly power bills. IID affects the air we breathe, the food we eat, the water we drink, and the power that lights our homes. The decisions at IID are big. They shape the future of this valley. Sometimes the decisions that get made behind this dais last for 99 years or longer. And sometimes the comments that get made behind this dais never die. We have the leadership that is dedicated and rooted in this community, but most importantly is principled and willing and able to set the direction of this valley's next century. Water built and sustains this valley. We have to protect this resource and keep it here at home with us. We need it today. Our children will need it tomorrow. To protect Imperial Valley's future, we must have vision and work without compromise to ensure that our water stays in our valley. The devastating water transfers have gone far enough. We have to protect the Salton Sea and keep our valley whole. In the next 6 years, key agreements on the Colorado River will expire, and it's vital for Imperial Valley and the IID to have a central leadership role, that Imperial Valley sets the terms, not having others set the terms for us. Why does water matter to all of us in Imperial Valley? Because water is life. Water in our valley means opportunity, local jobs, cleaner air, and a better future for our families. Without it, we have nothing. On March 3rd, vote J.B. Hamby for IID Director, Division 2. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. We thank each of the candidates in the audience for their participation. We encourage all citizens of Imperial County to vote either by mail or to be sent by mail in the ballot or at the polls on March 3rd. Thank you very much for your attendance and good night.
You've been listening to the 2020 Candidates Forum for the IID Division II race. The forum was recorded Thursday evening, January 30th. It is now available as a podcast by logging on to kxoradio.com or going to the KXO YouTube channel. Coverage is underwritten by CoLab of Imperial County and the Ivy Veg Growers. For KXO Radio, this is Jared Onchondo reporting.